Book 5, Chapter 11, Nadir. And then it was the next to last day, before the next beginning of time, before it seemed there had been nothing but dank overcast. No, really, it was anti-time. But that Sunday had been the last day of a sunny August heat wave, and a cold front arriving overnight had seen Monday's sky turn with chilled winds and waves of ice cirrus coming over the blue horizon, like waves on a beach suspended in time. What had happened that Sunday, while Hoberg still lived with his parents for one more month before his wedding with Nadja, left a suspended experience in time. And time kept advancing, running out moment to moment. Pamela and Carlos, Hoberg's friends now living in Brooklyn, were in town, and Hoberg had planned a particular experience for that weekend. Hoberg's parents had gone on vacation to the Bahamas, the house entrusted to him and Juno. Pamela, studying law and anthropology at NYU, and her recently married husband Carlos, a physiochemistry engineering master's candidate at Brooklyn Polytech Institute, had planned to come over from her mother's house to have lunch together when Nadja arrived. They had brought the massive New York Sunday Times newspaper and passed around the sections, reading quietly while they waited for Nadja to arrive from Yalesville. Soon Hoberg and Nadja would have their own apartment with their own freedom but new responsibilities. Sitting on the carpeted floor in the doorway of the sunny afternoon den, Hoberg was looking at the colorfully printed magazine section when he felt a sudden release from mental gravity, which sent his body somersaulting backwards in free fall through other rooms by the startled faces of Pamela and Carlos. "You say you can handle any mental dimension?" Carlos had dared him when they came over on Saturday morning, daring Hoberg to an experiment in the laboratory of the self. But this offer had so far been a disappointing dud, though Hoberg still waited. When Nadja at last arrived at 1 o'clock, she coaxed Hoberg out for a walk, and they had gone through the nearby streets down to Brewster's Pond and walked along the bricked edge walkway around the wide suburbanized pond. They evoked a romantic moment here as the reflections of light undulated in the water's soft sunlit surface. Rounding the curving high stone wall on their left, the walkway along the water came to the bridge over a tiny waterfall that they followed alongside down the little stone steps into the tree grove of Longbrook Park below. But the idea of Nazi SS officers secreting themselves behind trees and stones railings abruptly shadowed his pleasure. Was that a past memory of something or a vivid preview from the future? When Nadja and Hoberg came back to the house, they found on the stove a large pot of seasoned marinara tomato sauce, which Juno had left slowly simmering, in preparation for a homemade ravioli dinner that she was preparing for them all for dinner tonight. She had gone off to spend the afternoon with her fiancé, George. The house seemed quiet. Sometime later, as Hoberg happened to walk into the kitchen, he found Pamela and Nadja standing at the stove, sampling a spoonful of the tomato sauce. "I think it needs some salt," suggested Nadja, to which Pamela agreed, and took the shaker to sprinkle some in. But the shaker top came off, and the salt poured into the sauce. "Oh, no," says Nadja. "No, no," said Pamela, as Nadja, in panic, stirred in the entire tablespoonful. At exactly 3 o'clock, the telephone rang in the other room, and Nadja came to tell him that someone named Mr. Simony wanted to talk to him. When he took the call, General Simone's instructions were brief. Provoke the underground cell to penetrate the communications reactor complex. Do your friends have the device? Reluctantly, Hoberg admitted, yes. Tuesday night. Take over the control center. That's an order. Hoberg hung up the receiver very slowly. Just an order to end the universe. But this time, another future self stepped into his mind to interrupt the cycle. This second chance was in conscious time. That was it, he decided. He would change the tense of life from past to present. Hoberg would change from he to I. Inaction now would change the universe. An alteration on time. Period. 4 o'clock comes to find me, not Hoberg, lying sideways on the leather-cushioned swinging glider on the screened sun terrace, still trying unsuccessfully to peer into the inaccessible worlds hidden behind my eyeballs. Juno had gotten the Bridgeport Sunday Post, and I was looking over the funny papers. The brightly colored Prince Valiant strip in particular made him ponder over the passé ethic of chivalry. Uncle Simon could go to hell. His ilk surely would go there anyway. But as to his own dilemma, he would go through with it, getting married. He was in love, too, but didn't understand this principle of the formality. The wedding was only 2 weeks away. An idyllic mood had settled over the afternoon. Pamela and Carlos were sitting quietly at the other end of the terrace, quietly passing a bowl of hashish between them. It did nothing for me, and I waited, meanwhile, puzzled over my still unnatural, supernatural calm. Nadja, almost floating in the air, finally comes out onto the terrace to find me, to sit at the other end of the glider sofa on which I sit, leaned up against the end cushion. She sits with her feet on the floor, ready to curl up with me, and begins to playfully rock me in the glider back and forth, faster and faster until I'm dizzy. Please stop, please! I try to tell her as my brain tumbles, and I feel my last crisp sense of equilibrium cascade over a waterfall. But smiling and innocent, she speeds the glider on, the cascade rushing with more and more images and emotions of a tidal flood over me, finally bursting apart, inward over me, massive pieces of the wall of a dam, the dam of consciousness which holds in the reservoir of the subconscious. Downstream, carried through rooms of streaking anxiety, I struggle to remain afloat in my mind. The flow finally widening out were bubbling schizoid music strains, Schubert's Arpeggioni. Hey, Carlos, I try to tell him. Quit listening backward, Janusz, Carlos interrupts, shouting back at me in an annoying loud voice over the music playing on the living room stereo. Check these out, man. He rants, coming over to put the LPs he's brought over onto the record player. New record albums I haven't heard yet. Listen to these new Stones and Doors just out. Dig these lyrics, man. They're saying we didn't create this reality mess, but we can break it. Break the cycle. Near his bus transfer in the record shop in Bridgeport on Fairfield Avenue near Main Street on his way home from his factory job. 2 months after he returned from Europe, Hoberg had already discovered The Doors' first album just after its release, attracted by their rendition of Kurt Vile's The Alabama Song and references to William Blake. Now, the Rolling Stones had released Their Satanic Majesty's Request, which the music critics labeled the group's response to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. But Hoberg could hear was radically more groundbreaking. The song Citadel seems to paint the whole 20th century by the rhythm of the hammer and anvil, In the streets of many wars, hear the panzers come and crawl. You can hear their numbers call. But I begin to see that there is still no way out for me, tomorrow or the next day, that all actions must follow their course, not as pawns, but like spokes in the universal wheel, eternally doing what everyone else wants. Fuck it. But the heavy tonal pacing of the Doors' Shaman's Blues opens a new gate, singing, "There will never be another one like you. There will never be another one who can do the things you do. Oh, will you give another chance? Will you try, little try?" Then another lyric, "The whole world's a savior. Will you stop the pain?" Another one Carl plays for me is the new Doors song I've never heard, called The Lizard King, with a reference I recognize from Frasier's Golden Bough concerning the taboos restricting the Mikado's physical movements to his throne, not allowed to touch the ground under immediate pain of death. Not to touch the earth, not to see the sun, nothing left to do but run, 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 let's run. And then the disastrous terror. Dead president's corpse in the driver's car. The engine runs on glue and tar. Come on along, we're not going very far. To the east to meet the czar. With our young president blown apart in Zapruder Technicolor, our young hopes for peace and justice were killed by what dark demiurge? And now, not even 3 months ago, his younger brother, campaigning to introduce world peace, was cut down by another assassin, who, when thrown into his cell, asked for a copy of Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine to keep him company. But the demiurge kept saying, "There's no conspiracy, not even a theory." Now we can only bring back the light from inside the dark tunnel. Take the path into the dark abyss, looming ahead in the emptiness of future time. Like Novalis wrote, take the light as a weapon down into the camp of the dark army. Hoberg had started a diary of his nighttime dreams while a senior in high school, which while in Europe had turned into a nightmare scenario of nuclear apocalypse, a novel in the works of surreal desolation, still looming a potential reality. Finally, after Pamela and Carlos have left to head to their summer cabin in the woods of Sandy Hook, Nadja has put a Vivaldi record on the turntable, and this energized music comes in and out of focus in Hoberg's brain, circling the soul caught in an eddy, slowing down into a tonality of fullness. I am trying to slow down the pace of my brain, sitting before the stereo speakers, the long motion of waiting and reaching the end of the spiral, where the arid desert has already grown into vastness around my postural self, focused in an infinitesimal point, the layers above me glaring and scintillating with the celestial harmonics that shimmer through there are mercurial bodies, silhouettes, sitting on the wide, empty plain. All of life scatters back into focus as we are sitting in the kitchen time later, my sister and her fiancé and I around an unpretentious dinner table, a semicircle with the wall. I'm wondering why Nadja has not come to the table yet, as though leaving me out here wondering how and whether to explain myself in this state of mind to my naive little sister. The Doors music on the record player hasn't yet finished before it will switch over to Vivaldi's Four Seasons. I think of the two-thirds pun of four seasonings, hoping that the salt shaker hadn't destroyed the dinner. I see Nadja's face peeking around the corner of the living room passage as the Doors are singing, "The face in the mirror won't stop The girl in the window won't drop. A feast of friends, alive, she cried, waiting for me outside. Please pass me more salad, says Juno. I'm hauled back to mundane reality. I can't wait to try your ravioli, says George. Looking at everyone's face, I immediately forget just why I am afraid even to look up from my dish as the main course is brought to the table, my own physical tableau running concurrent with the bizarre fancies which sketch across my field of vision. Then there seems to dive so deep in an instant, like a high diver above the pool. A plane of green stillness is there again in the temporal moment. A soul of love is there. I can see it in her face, but I realize I am so weak that the surface I am on begins to cave in onto the surface of this moment. A closing tightness of myself, still surrounded by silence. What's the matter with the ravioli, Juno? Asked George. I'm not sure, she responds quickly, nervously, as I am becoming acutely self-aware of the strange and incomprehensible process with which I am putting food into my physical form. Beside me, the table conversation is becoming increasingly self-conscious among the silent participants. The mental questions of imagined failure, disappointment, and blame rapidly seek to take on looming and echoing effects. Tastes salty, says George. But a looming self-conscious monster stands confronting me, and the overwhelming mineral echo of sodium through me causes me to jump to my feet and speechlessly run from the room, never hearing, never knowing the words or the consequences of my ensuing spatial void. After a long time alone, hours, years, perhaps moments, I am joined, sitting on my bed, as I stare from the window. What's happening to you? Nadja asked me softly, taking my hand in hers, but I simply look down. Come, it's going to be low tide. She takes me by car through the streets of amnesia, of sunlit shadows and viaducts, over a river of opaque currents, over the bridge to Milford, through motionless, rapid pictures of another town's streets, and eventually out onto a sandy beach shoreline where she and myself arrive, walking hand in hand, she and I hand in hand, pausing at the end of the long, rocky bridge, land bridge, at the edge of Charles Island. A spot where Captain Kidd once combed the sand and hid his treasure. For real. As soon as we reach the island, we must turn back towards shore, the dimming sky, the returning tide waves slowly washing back over our path behind us, beneath huge pentacle stars hanging in the twilight above, and the brilliant moon crescent looming over, flashing on and off, still with daylight brightness. Walking up the stairway, returned and into my own bedroom, the now fallen darkness pierced through the window over my backyard, bombarded by yellow sulfur light photon bolts from the neighbor's yard lantern over the lilac trees, bursting before my window, black kaleidoscope shadows spiral apart, childhood's clipper ship rigging on the wall. As my eyes spiral apart upon the hesitation of an undressing vision turned aside, the side of a face, a shoulder, a naked breast, an arm. We come down close together, our bodies on the narrow bed, seeing gently caressing the tenderness of limbs kissed with lips, already triggered with love, heat rising in the small spaces left between the two bodies, those sights yet desired, her inner prickling folds of skin, the tiny bud heated, became moist to his touch, then to his lips, a flame to his nostrils. The the fullness of his blood, Zarganum, in her hand's pliant grasp. Skin slides along skin, friction. We climb together up into a raptured sky, into a weightlessness of passion's fathoms. Here we are, two natives of this compendium, naked, etheric, floating forms. This was a planet of a long, bloody history, an ocean of occurrences, the backwash of time, river bore of prophecy. And I saw the heavens open, and behold a great white steed, and he that sit upon him doth judge and make war. Opposing cavalry's armies charging like history, swords flashing, horse soldiers converging in battle. His eyes were a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. And he had a name written that no man knew but he himself. And the armies from the heavens followed him upon white horses. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations. Abridgment. The whole world naked, we raged at each other gently, passionately, silent into battle. Met there our warriors, complete. And our warriors, one hath slain the other and consumed him, a Eucharist of flesh and blood. And finally, we come to sit up in a mutual embrace, crying to one another a communion of joy. And when they went up upon the breadth of the earth and compassed the beloved city about, and fire came down from God out of the heavens and devoured them, primordial man retreated into the darkest jungles of the earth, reveled in the glory of the divine sustenance. And I, John, saw the new holy city coming down from the heavens, and all their tears shall be wiped from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither any more pain, for the former are passed away. And let him that is athirst come, and let him take freely the water of life. Laterness of eyes past. In the dark, we are looking from the foot of the bed out the window at the throbbing lantern light from my neighbor's yard trees. In the dream of my heart, I go walking through the subdued glow of a Moorish archway to where jewel-tinkling water droplets come falling from spout to tiny porcelain pool, flowing liquid coolness through hands, over faces, listening within the fractures of fluorescent quartz mirror reflections. Layers come away to escape through fingers, echoing beads prism away. Return together down through midnight darkness to the glider on the screen terrace outside. The warm, slow songs of 10,000 summer night crickets, limbs soft against limbs, skin against skin. We sit in our quietude, gazing into one another's eyes. We've tiptoed downstairs, naked, sexual, and defiant, out onto the open terrace darkness of the surrounding suburban houses, the tall azalea shrubbery concealing us here. Curled together on the leather glider sofa, sipping fresh orange juice of the sun fruit, the glimmer of a distant yellow street lamp glowing and revealing our faces and supple limbs for us to gaze at one another's surreptitious, sumptuous nakedness. But the sky still strobes with supernova flashes of stars, confusing my eyes through the trees of wire branches and shadow petal leaves, the images of fantasies and time-liquid hopes. wandering gaze through each other's eyes, our happiness moving on and further on. And on, in above, upstairs, bedroom once more, bed, body lovers, stampeding into Satori. You can again? She inquires. Then let yourself come inside my heart, she says, then joined. The motion of skin within skin, soul within soul, until the volcano erupts. She asks, what's happened? As an immense orange and yellow incendiary burst casts over our vision, a baptism of flame over me, now falling into repose. The smoke of this physical explosion slowly clears away, revealing its source above me, as I gaze on a wonder, a vision of the stroke which opens a doorway into life, the silhouette of a cross shape burning through a black wall of energy, beams of the pure light flooding in through the fissure from without, refracted in through the residue smoke. Stop world time. I lay back slowly down, listening to curious pulsing sine waves that I perceive, the harmonic sounds of my body limbs, which I slowly lift and lower to discern. Did you see it happen? This is our hope for the world, John, she whispers. I travel instantly to a remote cosmos, the space-time energy grid of my eternity of lives, my karma reseeded, contracted to this one neural vortex, concentric warp. Then, like a tangent, my astral shell, a vector arriving sonic, resonant against other dimensional walls, echoing capsules of me ricochets away back into here, ringing schizoid cadences, fuzzing electric filaments of music path my neuron synapses. Terrestrial creatures, these, my human race to be. Once spacemen touched the earth, not to be denied the concreteness of reality, they would arrive and depart from each world, the transportation of redemption. These many strange beings that I have seen walk in the midday market bazaar, intergalactic merchants of the avaricious dream. Pictures of turmoil yet remain, sons of darkness yet remain here, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against the world rulers of darkness, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Radio heterodyne, transfevers of force fields, these were chalices of the flesh. Awake, I remain now, piercing together broken relics of the amnesiac world, and she sleeps. The mind would scatter yet through the radio static and harmonics of all possible remembrances, the circus maximus of all ancient lost contacts, stretched bodies, moistened skin. Radio regenerative hiss, listening forms of the, to the, space-time parody. For in my heart, self, I knew not what was truly to come. I knew now what was truly to come. But the instantaneous light could preempt even prolepsis, a disaster waiting to be averted. The will that lined history opposed the subconscious sea, the menstruation envy of the battlefield, must needs itself to prevail. All would inevitably die. But a truer war was fought upon this softer stage, the darkness half of night, open passage of the picture dream, wherein all beings dance, demons prattle and angels cry. O sweet peace of dreamless night, hold your enemy within your arms. No joy was ever so forgotten. And slowly the sky turning from deepest violet to orange blue, heliocentric spirals unreal, the unsleeping body's quiet electric city, until the dawn's green, blue, and pink rays light my sleeping lover's childlike face, trickling silver dust over all the hollows and ridges of skin. The gold breath spinning into her hair, tousled on her pillow.